This is how and when to rebuke and when not to. And I have spoken on this before, and that's when John Paul said, you need to speak on that subject again. Well, there are many subjects we do speak on regularly, like feast days, and should. This is a difficult subject. This is a very difficult subject to speak on. It's a very difficult subject to get right. The Bible talks about it. Now, I want to read a few things that I'll just mention verses. But God's Word is about relationships. It's about our relationship, as was brought out in the sermonette, with God. One young lady, I could say, are you cold? But I won't pick her out. But what was my first clue that I can see her huddled up? That's good. God's Word is about relationships, isn't it? Our relationship with God, our relationship with each other. All of His laws have to do with relationships. Think about it. Every one of the Ten Commandments, first four about our relationship with God, and then the last six about our relationship with our parents, with people that we're angry at and would like to kill, with temptation in a relationship to be unfaithful to your mate, with adultery, or stealing from somebody. That certainly tends to destroy relationships. So even coveting something somebody else has is a problem with your relationship with them. If you love somebody, you don't want to take something they have. You wouldn't want, you want them to have it because you love them as much as yourself. So all of them are about love, loving God, loving your neighbor as yourself. They're all about relationships. But in relationships, there can often be serious problems between people. And God told the Israelites coming out of Egypt to rebuke each other if it was needed. So there is a command to rebuke. But the Bible gives clues as to when and when not to do that. It says, so as not to share in their neighbor's sin. Now, the context really was talking about idolatry. That if someone was doing something that was destructive to the nation, idolatry was destructive to the nation. And He says, you shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. And if you read commentaries, they're going to say it's really talking about you know he's committing idolatry over here. And you don't let anybody know. You just let him do it. Whereas you need to go to him. The Bible talks about rooting that kind of thing out. So that's a serious thing. And equivalent might be if we knew of a brother or a sister who was committing some really despicable and horrible destructive sin. For instance, it mentions in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 where there was a fornicator and the church knew about it, but they hadn't done anything. And that was a case that was destructive. That's going to do what? He says it's like leaven. Little leaven's going to leaven the whole lump. Now, on the other hand, you could have a brother or sister who, you know, isn't praying or isn't tithing. But that's not necessarily going to destroy, you know, destroy the church. It's not like leaven that's going to go through the church. It's not something that rises to that level. It might destroy that individual. And you might want to go to your brother or sister in that case, but it's not going to really go through the church. Jesus said to go to the brother who sins against you. I don't know if I gave you the verse for the previous one. I'm not going to turn to it. Leviticus 19:17. Jesus said, moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. So there's a clue ongoing. You go privately. You don't go to others. If he hears you, you've gained your brother. And the question is, well, what kind of attitude do you go with when you go to your brother? That was in Matthew 18, verse 15. And here's another one in Matthew 18, verse 17. He must have been speaking of something extremely serious in Matthew 18. Because the end result, if he didn't repent, was that he was disfellowshipped. You know, we don't disfellowship people for making an ordinary sin. When I say ordinary sin, losing your temper, putting your fist out the window and shaking it at somebody, which we shouldn't do. But it's where somebody sins against you. It's something where they lose their temper at you, or they do something, or that they promised they'd do something and they didn't do it. Because it says if he refuses to hear them, let him tell it to the church. But if he refuses to hear even the church, let him be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. You know, in Corinth, now I want you to think about this. I had a conversation online, email, with Mark Mickelson this week. Matter of fact, last 2 days. And talking about things, and he brought up the book of Corinth. And he said, you know, Paul probably really appreciated the Ephesians. But he had lots of trouble with the Corinthians. And I brought out, Corinth is an interesting place. I mean, Paul went into Europe. First 3 churches he went to, he was beaten, thrown in prison, and then basically asked to get out of town. So he left Philippi and went to Thessalonica, and he was run out of town in Thessalonica. So then he went down to Berea. And so the people from Thessalonica, Jews, came down, ran him out of Berea. So he went down to Athens. And there, that was the hoity-toity city. And he went up and he explained to them, you worship the unknown God, and I want to reveal him. But God wasn't calling a lot of people in Athens. That was the really uptown place with educational systems, had followed with Plato and Socrates and Aristotle. So he left there and went to Corinth. And God said to him, nobody will hurt you in Corinth. I'll protect you. Stay here. Because I have many people here. What an interesting thing. God didn't have many people in Athens. He had lots of people in Corinth. Corinth was considered the Las Vegas, or worse, of the Greek world, of the Roman world. As a matter of fact, it was so debauched, it had dozens and dozens of temples with over 1,000 temple prostitutes. And the equivalent in Greece to talk about somebody really getting debauched, they would say he Corinthianized. He was acting like a Corinthian. And that's where God had many people. And that church, you know, Paul must have wondered, why did you call a lot of people here? Because that's the church that gave him trouble. They had divisions, arguments, brother taking brother to court, people criticizing Paul, mates separating, which is not unusual. Paul calls them carnal. tells them they are puffed up and, you know, they have a fornicator. They haven't done anything. He says, just it is only the fornicator that Paul says to put out of the congregation. All those people with all their problems, it's only the fornicator that he says to put out of the church. They were having divisions where one said, I'm of Paul, I'm of Apollos. And he says, are you not carnal that one of you says, I'm of Paul and I'm of Apollos, and there's division among you? Aren't you carnal? The only person he says to put out is the fornicator. All these other people, with all their problems, he doesn't say to put them out. So we have to think, when we're thinking about rebuking someone, how serious is this? Is this a minor thing? Is this something that hurt my feelings, or is this something that is really destructive to the congregation? There are many examples in the Bible of people wrongly rebuking. Now think of this. There are examples in the Bible of people rebuking people. You know, in the majority of cases in the Bible where someone rebuked someone else, the rebuke was wrong. The rebuke was wrong. They shouldn't have rebuked the person. The International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, under the article Rebuke, says, Volume 4, page 52, I'm sure all of you have this at home, speaking of the Old Testament, it says, where the subject is human, rebuking is generally shown to be unjustified. And first example they give is of Joseph. Joseph had a dream. It was from God. And his brothers rebuked him. Even his father Jacob rebuked him for the dream that he had of the sun and the moon and the stars all bowing down to him. And that was from God. It says, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? And the fact is that certainly his brothers and his stepmom, anyway, I don't know if his father came down, but they certainly came down and, in a sense, they were under Joseph, because Joseph ruled over all Egypt under the Pharaoh. And his brothers certainly fell down to him, didn't they? They fell down before him, begged him. David was wrongly judged and rebuked by his older brother. David came down and there was Goliath yelling out to them, and David said, who is letting this guy do this? This uncircumcised Gentile. And David's older brother came to David and said, now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David. And he said, why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. He's accusing David of trying to stir up a battle, which David wasn't. Must have shocked his brother when, just in a little bit, he saw his little baby brother, by comparison, go out and face Goliath and kill him. And God was using him. Continuing in the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, concerning the New Testament. As in the Old Testament, most instances of humans rebuking one another are shown to be unjustified. So the majority of cases in the New Testament, when a human rebukes a human, it was unjustified. Now there were proper cases where it was justified. But here is the case, they bring out these cases. The disciples rebuked the people who brought children to be blessed by Jesus. They brought young children to him that he might touch them. But the disciples rebuked those who brought them. And what I'm bringing out is we've got to be very careful before we decide somebody needs to be rebuked. Of course, normally most human beings rebuke each other in the middle of anger. And don't stop and think. You're just angry at this person. Jesus was falsely criticized and was even rebuked by Peter. Remember that? Peter rebuked Jesus. This is in Mark. He began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and after 3 days rise again. He spoke this word openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. It's pretty bold, rebuking Jesus. But when he had turned around and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. Now Jesus turned around and rebuked Peter. Ah, this was justified. So there are cases of rebuke. God always rebukes correctly, saying, "Get behind me, Satan, for you're not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." So let's turn to Proverbs chapter 9. Verse 7 and 8. So let's talk about when and when not to rebuke. I didn't ask John Paul why he wanted me to give this. I wondered, did somebody chew him out? And he thought, that guy needs that sermon on when not to rebuke. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 7 and 8. Now, here's a time not to rebuke. He who reproves a scoffer gets shame for himself. You know, there are just some people that we don't need to rebuke. It's not going to do any good at all. Absolutely not. Now, you might think of somebody at the office or somebody who's angry at you on the highway or somebody yells at you, attempting to yell back. Even if somebody's just honking their horn at you, then you want to honk your horn back, and they want to make an obscene gesture at you, and you'd like to say, same to you, buddy. But here in Proverbs chapter 9, verse 7, he who reproves a scoffer gets shame to himself. And he who rebukes a wicked man gets himself a blemish. Now, I would hope that this is talking about people who are not brothers and sisters in the church. But, you know, it could be. But I hope not. I appreciate the members of the congregation here. I appreciate coming here and seeing basically the good attitudes. So, but it says, do not reprove a scoffer lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. So, you know, they've got to figure out, you know, is this somebody who's going to love me when I say this? Or is this, you know, it'd be nice to say, well, you should love me because I'm chewing you out. If you have to tell them that, they probably aren't the wise person. Wise person, you don't have to tell them that they should appreciate you. They will appreciate it. So analyze, is this somebody I should really correct or not? I have known of people where they were corrected and they didn't take it well, and later they came back, thought about it, and apologized. So that can happen. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. So think carefully. I want to read that in the King James. He that reproves a scorner gets to himself shame, and he that rebukes a wicked man getteth himself a blot. There you go. You don't want a blot. Scorn means contempt and disdain. Someone who's contemptuous of things. The Living Bible has it this way. If you rebuke a mocker, you will only get a smart retort. Yes, he will snarl at you. Now, if that starts to happen, it's time. You know, if you go to somebody, you think, well, I think this person is wise. I think this person will appreciate me coming as a brother or sister. So you go to the person and you start to say something and you get real, somebody, they're really defensive. It might be time to just say, okay, see how wise you are to figure this is not the moment. If you rebuke a mocker, you will only get a smart retort. Yes, he will snarl at you. So don't bother with him. See, you don't rebuke everybody. You got to think carefully. Don't bother with him. He will only hate you for trying to help him. But a wise man, when rebuked, will love you all the more. I wonder how many wise men you have ever rebuked and who loved you more. Mock means scorn. It talks about mocking. If you rebuke a mocker, it means scorn and contempt, but adds the meaning of ridicule. New American Bible. While we're going through this verse. He who corrects an arrogant man. By the way, ladies, it doesn't say anything about women, so don't take this personally. Maybe it's only men who are this way. There, I think, no, Cassidy's nodding. So, that's right. An arrogant man earns insult, and he who reproves a wicked man incurs opprobrium. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Opprobrium? Am I? You know what it means? It means scorn. I looked it up, and I don't remember the pronunciation. Opprobrium, I think. Scorn, disgrace, shame. New American Bible. I thought it was supposed to be an easy to read Bible. Puts in New Revised Standard. Whoever corrects a scoffer wins abuse. Whoever rebukes the wicked gets hurt. A scoffer who is rebuked will only hate you. The wise, when rebuked, will love you. Okay, let's move on from there and read another one. There are a bunch of them like this. Proverbs 15, verse 12. You don't have to go far for that one, do you? I've got a number of Proverbs. Proverbs is so good for wisdom. Proverbs 15, verse 12. A scoffer does not love one who reproves him, nor will he go to the wise. Now, there are a lot of verses here like this in the Proverbs. So God's trying to emphasize it Yeah, just there are a lot of people that are not people that you can really rebuke. Now, if somebody's doing something that's going to really cause problems for God's people, God's congregation, then something has to be done. But people who are basically just a problem to themselves or unpleasant to be around, if they don't seem that they want anything, there's not much you can do. Proverbs 14:12 is the same as Proverbs 16:25. And it says, there is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. Now, I bring that in to show, if you're going to, if I or you are going to rebuke somebody, we've got to realize that over 90% of the time, we're going to someone who feels he's doing what's right. So you're going to somebody to rebuke him. Now, occasionally there are people who will say, yes, I know, you're right. But most of the time, people think what they're doing is right. Because there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. It's wrong. And Proverbs 16:2 has very, very similar thing. Proverbs 16:2. All the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirits. Now, if you would look at that and say, well, look, I know I've done wrong. Everybody knows they've done wrong. True, but we've all justified it. Even people in prison, where they've gone to them and said, well, is it right to steal? No, but if you steal millions, you're a great financier. Look at what the banks are doing. Look at what rich people are doing. Look at how the government is wasting money. Look. So it's, you know, some excuse why my taking this wasn't as bad as what somebody else has done. See, justifies it, cleans it up, even though we know it's wrong. Well, I shouldn't have lost my temper. I mentioned to my wife, I've gone to people's house. And I think I've mentioned to you before. And the lady's got a black eye. I've had a lady come to my house and with a black eye. And I'll talk to the man and say, what are you doing? Hitting your wife. And just carnally, he will tell me what all she did. And I think, you know, it would have been hard to not hit her. It would have been really tempting to really give her, a smack. So, and I've known women who have done the same thing. There was a lady up in, couple in the church, up in, I think this was even after they were in the church, but up in the Boston area. And he was just making her very irritated. I don't remember what it was about. And she was cooking on the stove. She had a fry pan. She just took the fry pan over, didn't hit him with it, just put it in his lap. I mean, it was hot. And I could say they both were laughing about it because this was sometime later. They were telling me about it. But if I had said, well, do you think that's the right thing to do? Well, no, but here's what caused me to do it, and then you see, we tend to justify what we know is wrong. Should you have taken those tithes? Well, no, but, we had this, that, and the other, and I would have these problems and this financial trouble and on and on and on. Yeah. We can justify anything. And we generally tend to do so. So, all the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes. Proverbs 21:2 also. Proverbs 21:2. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. This is a thought to have when you're going to talk to somebody, if you think you're going to go, is you're going to somebody who very likely will think that he was justified in what he did. And, there's another one. Why did I not put these in order? Proverbs 12, verse 15. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. Oh, I know. Proverbs 12, verse 15. You'd say, well, it's only fools who are right in their own eyes. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. You know something? What it's basically saying is human beings are foolish. Human beings are foolish. I took a course, a CD course, college course, on conflict management. They no longer call it conflict resolution because you don't always resolve. Sometimes you're just managing conflict. And they brought out in studies that basically as they study people and how they handle conflict, people do not act rationally. We think of ourselves as being rational, but they say people are basically act, men and women, on emotion. Men like to think, well, it's women who are so emotional. But men tend to act on emotion also, is the way they did it. And it was interesting, when somebody did something that caused a breach, a hurt, a fault, that most people, if you ask them why this other person did this, and they would go to colleges and they'd give examples and say, why did the person do that? Well, because that's the way this person is. This person is a so-and-so person. And that's the way he is. And so the reason he acted that way is because that's his personality. But when they ask people themselves why they did something, they don't say, because that's the way I am. I'm that kind of a person. Well, rarely somebody might, but usually they don't. They say, because of, and then they mention a circumstance. See, we think of ourselves as rational, and there's a circumstance that caused us to do something. And we did it because this circumstance. But somebody else did something because that's the way he is. He's that kind of person. I'm not that kind of person. But there was a circumstance that caused me to do this. And they said, basically everybody judges what they did as being rational because of the circumstance. But everybody else, it's the way they are. That's their personality. And it's emotion. And we're all foolish in God's eyes. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. We're all doing it. We've all done it. Hopefully we're getting over it to some degree. Children have foolishness. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him. Proverbs 22:15. Proverbs 27, verse 22. Proverbs 27 and verse 22. Though you grind a fool in a mortar, and I realize I'm hurrying along here. Though you grind a fool in a mortar with a pestle, along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. I mean, you'd think after a while, in correcting and rebuking and grinding him away in a mortar with a pestle, saying, get in there, giving it to him, it doesn't seem to help. Dale Carnegie wrote a book, famous book. Doesn't mean that all of us know it. He wrote several books. Matter of fact, Dale Carnegie wrote a book on public speaking, which was the textbook for speech classes at Ambassador College. It was written by Dale Carnegie. But his first big book that he wrote that I know of was How to Win Friends and Influence People. Have any of you read it? It is really a good book. It's excellent. Now, he came to the conclusion that you should never rebuke people because it never works. Now, I disagree with that. But what he saw in the world was that 99% of the time, which seems pretty pretty conclusive, that when you rebuke somebody, it never, ever improves anything. Never, never. Page 41. I love this. Do you know someone you would like to change and regulate and improve? Let me interject. You know how to the way you do that? Well, for women, you marry him and then you straighten him out. So, I mean, I'm joking, but it doesn't work. Do you know someone you'd like to change and regulate and improve? Good. That is fine. I am all in favor of it. But why not begin on yourself? From a purely selfish standpoint, that is a lot more profitable than trying to improve others. Yes, and a lot less dangerous. He's basically saying, work on yourself, don't work on others. You can't help others. That's in this world. He basically ran across people who didn't have God's Holy Spirit. Page 42. If you and I want to stir up a resentment tomorrow that may rankle across the decades and endure until death, just let us indulge in a little stinging criticism, no matter how certain we are that it is justified. When dealing with people, let us remember, we are not dealing with creatures of logic. We are dealing with creatures of emotion, creatures bristling with prejudices and motivated by pride and vanity. Well, you've really got a high opinion. He continues, bitter criticism caused the sensitive Thomas Hardy, one of the finest novelists ever to enrich English literature. Do I remember any of his books? Far from the Maddening Crowd? To give up forever the writing of fiction. Criticism drove Thomas Chatterton, the English poet, to suicide. Benjamin Franklin, tactless in his youth, became so diplomatic, so adroit at handling people. You know what adroit means in the French? It means right hand. It's your right hand. You know what gauche means? Left-handed. See, most of us are not very good with our left hands. We're good with our right. So the French, if you really do something well, it's right-handed, adroit. And we've taken it into the English language from the Normans conquering England. He became so adroit at handling people, this Benjamin Franklin, that he was made American ambassador to France. The secret of his success, quote from Benjamin Franklin, I will speak ill of no man and speak all the good I know of everybody. End of quote. But now, Dale Carnegie continues, any fool can criticize, condemn, and complain, and most fools do. But it takes character and self-control to be understanding and forgiving. And then on page 46, he says, instead of condemning people, let's try to understand them. Let's try to figure out why they do what they do. That's a lot more profitable and intriguing than criticism, and it breeds sympathy, tolerance, and kindness. To know all is to forgive all. So his first principle on how to win friends and influence people, Don't criticize, condemn, or complain. Now, you know, the Bible doesn't totally agree with him, but he's dealing with people who are don't have Jesus Christ living in them. But I'm just giving you the first point, really, is to be careful who you go to. It's not always going to help. Sometimes it'll make things a lot worse. You know, our parents had to correct us. They had to rebuke us. My parents spanked me. Not enough. I wouldn't have said that as a child. But it would have been better had I had a little more. They had to. That's part of what parents have to do. Because if you don't, the kid's going to kill himself. Parents are all day long saying, little toddler's going around, no, no, don't put that down. Get off of that. All day long, mothers are having to say no. Fathers get to come home and do it a little bit too. They had to do it. Well, what percent would you say of the criticism and correction you had from your parents was correct? What percent? I'd say way over 90% of when my parents corrected me, they were correct. But were they correct all the time? No, I wasn't correct all the time in correcting my four children. But what do we tend to remember most of our parents correcting us? It's when they were wrong. I can remember my mother correcting me when she was wrong. I mean, she said, the reason that I went to Ambassador College and became part of the Church of God was rebellion. That I did it because I've just tended to be a, you know, look, I taught her that I was a rebellious person. I was a free spirit. She said, when I was little, I was in the third grade. We lived in the Philippines. And she said, when you went out the door, I never knew when you would come home. She said, I could have beaten you and put chains on you. And it was the only way to have kept up with you. Because when I went out, I loved to play. So my mother rebuked me, but you know, the reason I went to Worldwide Church of God had nothing to do with rebellion. It had to do with listening to the blues on WLAC, but just before the blues came on, there was The World Tomorrow. And I ordered a booklet because I thought, well, let me tell you, the United States and Britain are not listed in prophecy. I know that. But I want to get this, so I wrote and said, if it's free, I didn't want them to have a letter just saying, send it to me, because then they might send me a bill. So I wrote in the letter, if it's free. And I read that. I'd never heard of it. I'd been going to all these churches. I'd gone to all kinds of churches. Every church that had a cute girl, I was there. And I never heard of Ephraim and Manasseh and you know, Jacob crossing his hands and putting the name Israel on. I've never heard of any of that in any of those churches. There it was in the Bible. But my mother said it was because, you see, but we tend to remember more where we were falsely corrected than where we were correctly corrected. Because we're human too. Okay. I want to talk about how to receive rebuke. We've talked about being careful in not rebuking, which I think is the main thing that we need to think about. Should I do this? But I want to read a couple of verses on God's instruction on how to receive rebuke. I'm not going to take a long time with them. Psalm 141, verse 5. Psalm 141, verse 5. Let the righteous strike me. Now, I'll tell you what. It takes a lot of character and God's Spirit if someone comes to rebuke us, even if they are wrong, to be patient and listen. Now, I want you to know this, and I've said this. If I'm wrong with about something in a sermon or something else I do, you have the perfect right to come to me. You have a perfect right to come and say, you're wrong. A person who has no fear in doing that and has done that several times, maybe listening in right now, that's Bill Vernich. He is always willing to say, you're wrong about that date, or you're wrong about the way that happened, or you're wrong about this, that, or the other. And he knows that I've always listened. I think his memory, even though he's about 8.5 years older than me, his memory is better than mine. But it says, Psalm 141, verse 5, let the righteous strike me. It shall be a kindness. And let him reprove me. It shall be as excellent oil. Let my head not refuse it. For still my prayer is against the deeds of the wicked. So you have the right to come to me now. And you have the right to go to any other person in this congregation, including all the speakers, especially the speakers. If you disagree with something they said in the sermon, look, none of us get it right 100%. I'm not going to get it right 100% in this message. You have a right. Now, if it's not something major, why worry yourself with it? But if it's something that's important, false doctrine, going to cause a problem. And you know, if I don't agree with you after you come, you have a right to go to Ken Martin, regional pastor. Take it all the way up to the home office and take it before the council of elders and encourage them to have me beaten or whatever you feel is necessary. But the righteous strike me. You have a right to do that. And by the way, if somebody gives something in a sermon that you think is really wrong, and you go to him and he disagrees, if it's not me giving it, you have a right to come to me then. But go to him first. Proverbs 25, verse 12. We need to be the wise person who loves the person who comes to us and be totally different. Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise reprover to an obedient ear. What we need to do if we're going to someone else to rebuke them is go as the most humble person you can. If you go to someone when you are angry, it's just going to cause trouble. If you go to your brother or your sister, you have to go with lots and lots of prayer. Now, I've told how when Lucretia and I were first married and we got into a tiff over a card game. She was not interested in the card game. She was talking and and she was my partner. And we hadn't been married long, so she could say she knew I was upset, and that made her upset. And so we went home, and I knew, well, this is not the time to talk about it. So I prayed about it. I don't remember how long I prayed about it, maybe a day. And then I said, we need to sit down and talk. First thing I did was apologize. And then I told her I loved her. And I said, just because I did something wrong doesn't mean you should do something wrong. I jump off the cliff, shouldn't jump with me. And I was in a bad attitude, but that should not have let you get in a bad attitude too. So we both did wrong. Well, she was crying. And then we knelt down and asked God to forgive us and bless us. But I had to go pray about it before I talked to her to get my attitude correct, that I was going because I loved her, not because I was angry at her for not paying attention to this stupid card game. That would be. And then she got a bad attitude over my bad attitude. So that's something we all have to do. When we go to somebody, we need to crawl on our stomach in humility. If we're going to go to somebody else and let them know that we're coming out of love. Now, what if we get a wrong rebuke? What if somebody rebukes you or me incorrectly? Proverbs 12, verse 16. A fool's wrath is known at once. Proverbs 12, verse 16. A fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame. I like the Living Bible. A fool is quick-tempered. A wise man stays cool when insulted. That was the Revised Standard. A vexation of a fool is known at once, but the prudent man ignores an insult. New American Bible. The fool immediately shows his anger, but the shrewd man passes over an insult. Moffat. A fool shows instantly that he is angry. A prudent man ignores an insult. And the Good News Translation, when a fool is annoyed, he quickly lets it be known. Smart people will ignore an insult. Jesus was falsely criticized. And when the criticizer wasn't being called, he didn't reply. You know, just was silent about it. He did reply to Peter. Now, I'm not saying he didn't ever reply. He did reply to Peter. Okay. I guess what I want to go to is 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18 through 23. First Peter, chapter 2, verses 18 through 23. Yeah, there are a lot of examples of if somebody comes to you and they mistreat you or do something wrong, to take it peacefully. To not return anger for anger. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. Now, none of us are slaves, but here's the principle. For this is commendable. If because of conscience toward God, one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. And that certainly is true if somebody rebukes you of something that you didn't deserve. It is so hard to take a rebuke that you know is undeserved. For what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults, verbally in this case, you take it patiently? What credit is that? But when you do good and suffer for it, boy, is that hard. You do something good and then you turn around. Yeah, as the saying is, no good deed goes unpunished. And sometimes you do a good deed and then something bad comes back. But when you do good and suffer for it, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. I don't know, maybe John Paul was wanting me to give this because he wanted to go rebuke somebody and wanted them to take it patiently. I don't know. Hopefully, if that's true, maybe he's forgotten what it was and he won't come to you. Is it the other way around? Okay. All right. This is commendable before God. I'll tell you what, if this was for Pat, you're in trouble. Well, I just heard Pat laugh, so that was her laugh. So that's good. You're still safe as long as she laughed, yes. If you take it patiently, it is, you're mistreated. Somebody's correcting you. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps, who committed no sin, nor was guile found in his mouth, who when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. I haven't covered every example that could be brought up, but the general principle is there. And this last verse, or here's part of the verse in simple English. When they insulted Christ, he did not insult them back. While he was suffering, he wasn't trying to get even. Jesus gave himself over to God who judges fairly. And sometimes in relationships, that's what you have to do. You just have to say, God, you're the one that will handle this. You'll take care of it. So the basic principles I think you see, and that is be very careful. We are to rebuke on it. There are times. But be very careful. I mean, if you go to somebody and they push back, listen to them. That's the moment. If somebody's defending himself, let him decide. Don't interrupt. You may get a half hour of defense. Just listen patiently. Just wait. If the person seems calm enough that you want to say, well, here's how I feel. See, don't start with the word you. That's pushy. But say, here's how it seems to me. Here's how I feel about it. And all those other things. So.